You know, every time I speak, I want the truth to come out. You know what I'm saying? Every time I speak, I want to shiver. You know, I don't want them to be like, they know what I'm going to say because it's polite. They know what I'm going to say. And even if I get in trouble, you know what I'm saying? That ain't that what we're supposed to do? It's, I'm not saying I'm going to rule the world or I'm going to change the world, but I guarantee that I will spark the brain that will change the world.
Hello.
Hey.
Hey.
You hear me?
Mhm.
All right. Cool. Cool. Yeah. I think I'm just like I'm just trying. This is my first time doing it this way, but it's all good. I just wanted to reach out to you because I saw that one post. I think I just vaguely mentioned it to you before I called you about that one post in particular about how you not you but the about Trump, systematic racism doesn't exist, and then, you know, Biden saying, or whatever, I think he said he's sorry for it or something to that effect. And and so I seen that, like when I saw you say it, that was like the second or third time I seen it. And so I had a question because I wasn't aware of it, and it wasn't in quotes, but it, yeah, it wasn't in quotes. But I know for me, since I don't watch a lot of, I've never been watching the TV, so I don't necessarily see everything. But when I saw it the first time, I thought to myself, I was wondering, had Trump ever said that? And the reason I say that is because, you know, from what I could tell over the years at various times when he's kind of been called on it, he's always, in my opinion, went on his way, in a sense, to not acknowledge it. But I was wondering, was that something he had not said, or is it just kind of something that's being put up because he doesn't acknowledge it?
I don't know if it's something that he said precisely, but his actions say it to me. And
okay.
They consistently
I didn't mean to cut you off. No.
No, they consistently reinforce that.
Because what happened was somebody put it on my post. And I kept thinking to myself, I'm like, I don't think he said that. And the reason that it was particular to me was because, you know, again, to be honest with you, the way they posted it on my post, I thought it was their saying. But when I saw you post it, I was like, oh, that must be something going around. But the thing that stood out to me, and it was probably one of my typical independent thinking posts or whatever that made them put that on my post. But I remember thinking, and you and I have talked about this before, where I've kind of thought to myself, that Trump is so arrogant that I think he caters, you know, to people and what they want to hear, that to him, you know, in my opinion, sometimes he's not what he appears to be, for example, even to us. And in particular, because you probably saw this or when he got called out for, not called out, but that one guy exposed what he had been saying in those interviews. If you were, they came out like maybe a month ago.
And actually, he's actually stated it in a roundtable in Kenosha. I just looked it up.
Right. Well, yeah, and so, yeah, and I don't know if we're talking about the same thing, but that one guy that recorded him, he acknowledged the systemic racism to that guy. You know what? Some guy has got a book coming out, or it might have already came out.
Are you talking about Bob Woodward?
Yeah, that's the name. I heard that name. Yeah.
Right.
So I heard, you know, pieces of that, and he clearly acknowledged that there was an issue with systemic racism. And so that's why, if you could imagine me hearing, seeing that, and it's not about me, you know, caping for Trump, but for me, it was proof that this dude is playing even in a sense when we say he's just racist. To me, it's a proof that he's so narcissistic, if you want to use that word, that he literally is just playing those people too. So it's like he's smart enough to not acknowledge it, but I'm saying smart enough in the sense that he's intentional in not acknowledging it because he knows that's a big portion of his base, and he says things that obviously get our community super upset, you know, like the way he handled the Proud Boys things or whatever, which I could say was even once I came to understand the Proud Boys wasn't who we thought they were, but just in that moment, he still failed miserably. So, you know what I'm saying? I'm still calling it what it is.
But when I see that comment going around, well, this guy said, you know, like I say, it wasn't quoted, but he says there's no systemic racism, and then Biden acknowledges it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm getting sitting here thinking to myself, I'm like, nah, he didn't say that. And he got caught telling the truth that he knows that it exists. And so for me, I know I'm kind of repeating myself, but I'll say this. For me, I still struggle with seeing either one of these guys as different, especially in the sense that Trump is just playing that part of his base. And I'm not, again, this is not me defending him.
Right.
I just don't. I struggle with, and since the 80s, we've had all these different politicians over the years offer these different apologies kind of when they've been brought to the table. And so Biden offering an apology based on his record, he's the least that I could respect in all the apologies I've seen since I was old enough to pay attention to politics in my lifetime. He has the worst record. So I don't see him as somebody, and again, it's not for you to make him forgivable, but I'm just saying mm-hmm. I completely struggle with how do I forgive a guy with his track record is in politics, obviously is much longer to, you know, than Trump's or whatever, but the track record is piss poor. And I think he only does it because it's politically expedient. And I'm not saying you should, but I'm just saying that's a struggle for me when the other guy, in my opinion, is not as racist as we make him out to be. He's just playing those races like he comes and makes up the platinum plan, just playing us to, you know, playing those who mess with him, his blacks. It's like, I don't think he's just willing to play between both people. He doesn't care about either, in my opinion.
So I don't necessarily disagree with that, but here's my perspective. Trump is a malignant narcissist, which is the same thing essentially as being a sociopath, and he's transactional. So he will say or do whatever he was if he's getting something in return. But the fact that he's a malignant narcissist, the fact that that equates to being a sociopath, the fact that he has a history of racism dating back to the 70s, and the fact that his administration has systematically done things, removed protective measures that will negatively impact my community. So, yes, Biden has a longer history in politics. He has an atrocious history when it comes to civil rights, racism. Much of that was backed by black people, because at that time they thought, they bought into the belief that there was this super predator coming around to take us all out in our homes and our cars, et cetera. So at the end of the day, I look at what Trump has done. I look at what his administration has done, the environmental measures that he's rolled back. And we're going to go back to the days where our communities are impacted by environmental racism as a result. He's removed measures that impact our school kids. Our kids are already suspended more often. They are put in in-school suspension more frequently, expelled more frequently. He's removed protective measures there. So I see him as an existential threat to my community, and that's why I made the post that I made.
I definitely respect it for yourself, and I guess the bigger thing for me is now moving it into how divided we are, and now, you know, and I'll admit simplifying it down to, you know, again, someone that I don't see as entirely different. Like, I can't find the difference, or here's something that's pretty much been super consistent for me, and it's partly due to that, you know, that transactional aspect of Trump from the standpoint of, you know, I think personally, I've said this before, I think the Democrats have overplayed the identity politics to, in my opinion, I think it was a mistake to reduce a big part of our decision on, quote unquote, how racist this guy is, when I'm looking at what I consider to be clear evidence of him being transactional to the extent that he's not as racist as Biden has been throughout his career. I mean, and the gaffes to me show that they're both privileged enough not to be aware of what racism even is, to where Biden made the mistakes that he's made on the campaign trail and didn't clean them up until he realized how bad he needed our vote. And then I say, I look at the other guy and I'm like, well, I don't see the racism part. I definitely have reasons why I can't vote for him. And then, so again, I point that out because I think it's been an overplay. And part of me saying that it's an overplay is also suggesting that I, in a sense, that I think others can look at it in that manner. And if they do, not so much if they're right or wrong, but if others are looking at it in that manner, the reason I call it an overplay is because if they're looking at it in that manner, they're struggling with that association.
And so I made a post.
And I'm using that transactional aspect as one example, but I get for people who already may be a little prone not to see that, you know, possibly due to their privilege. So I get even more so while they're just like, that's a label that doesn't fit. And I think for those who say, you know, it ain't just black people that say he is, right? It's plenty of people who say that he is. But I can psychologically see how that label absolutely doesn't seem to stick due to, you, as you say, when you go, you know, in the 70s, he had these issues or whatever. And, you know, obviously, while he wasn't president, we didn't know about him. So, you know, he goes through that period, which is very normal for a privileged, rich white man to, you know, want to be around black celebrities. That's nothing new and doesn't prove anything. But I can see the psychology of, oh, you had to dig to find out how he did housing, whereas he had never been referred to as a racist throughout the 80s when the quote-unquote hip-hop community loved him. And again, it's not trying to make that right. I can definitely see if how that thought process can make it difficult to have that label stick, and that's why I think it is hurt to have overplayed that label as you know, in this political game. I just think that is very much hurt the Democrats to push in that manner.
Okay, so first, Trump didn't say that systemic racism exists. He didn't say that in the Bob Woodward tape. He said that he doesn't.
But what he did say, what he did was Bob Woodward asked him point blankly. You know, again, maybe I could pull it up, but I definitely remember absolutely acknowledge. Okay,
less of a problem. He says America has less of a problem with racism than other countries. And then he asked them about white privilege after that. And he commented about that.
Well, but it was a question before that, I thought, too. Comments related? What was the question?
Trump told Woodward that he hasn't taken time to understand the plight of black Americans protesting systemic racism. And he scoffed at Woodward's insinuation that people like them, two white men from similar eras raised with advantages that well-off parents can provide, should grapple with that subject. He also told him that other countries have bigger problems with racism than this country does.
Yeah, I remember that part, but I'm saying, is that the beginning of the racist question? Because I feel like it stood out to me more than that. So what was Woodard's question to him? I couldn't hear what you read.
I guess it's that
I remember him asking him something, and I remember him going, "Yeah, I remember Trump going, "Yeah, it's definitely he didn't say definitely, but it's been more of a problem." But I don't want to misquote what Woodard asked him when he acknowledged it. And then, of course, he turned around and downplayed it. But I remember him turning around and downplaying his initial answer. And again, I'm not trying to make him right. I just made him – that's just – in here, I heard, you know, I listened to it, and I heard him acknowledge it and then turn around and downplay it. But the acknowledgement I thought was clear. But maybe I misheard it. Because the point I heard you say was that the downplay part.
Do you think there is systemic – He says, do you think there is systemic or institutional racism in this country? Well, I think there is everywhere. I think probably less here than in most places or less here than many places. Okay, but it is here in a way that it has an impact on people's lives. I think it is, and it's unfortunate, but I think it is.
So that's where I see. That's what I'm saying. That's the clear acknowledgement to me. I think it is, and it's unfortunate.
But
then
so the fact that he downplays it is problematic for me. And even beyond that, as he goes deeper into that. But I made a post last week that talks about the differences because it's people are saying that, that black women are, you know, always on the Democratic bandwagon. And I'm an independent, and I hate that I have to vote for Biden. But when I look at where we are as a country, and when I look at the things that Trump has done, when I look at the people that he's appointed to the federal bench who might impact my grandchildren or my great-grandchildren or my great-great-grandchildren, because these are young people, young judges, 30s, in their 30s, some of them, and they're being appointed to a lifetime appointment. They are known racist. They are known xenophobic people. They are known misogynistic people.
Yeah, I
they
get that, but I'm just saying this man clearly doesn't care
let me
about
finish.
That, though. You know, that's what I'm just throwing
finish.
Out that he doesn't
no, no,
care
you,
about
you,
that
you,
at all.
You were talking about the divide. I'm getting to that. I'm getting to the divide. I see that. And what I see with a lot of the men who are supporting Trump is because of what Biden did with the 94 crime bill. And what the way that I positioned it is that they are looking at it from a macro level, M-A-C-R-O, whereas a lot of women are looking at it from a micro, M-I-C-R-O level. And when I say that, it's because the women are looking at what changes has he done to the, in the Department of Education that are going to impact my children. He's trying to remove the safety net so my child doesn't have health insurance. He's putting federal judges on the bench that could adversely impact members of my family. He's rolling back environmental regulations that could potentially impact my community and bring back environmental racism. That's why so many black people in our community have asthma from a macro, yeah, they have cancer too as a result of that. And because black men are looking at it from a macro level, women are digging deeper because a lot of us are the ones who are raising the kids and
yeah,
have to
I'm
deal
not,
with
I'm
these.
Not disputing that.
And so,
well, yeah, I'm
and
not
so
disputing
that's
that,
the divide.
But, well, no, I didn't ask about the divide. We went here because you mentioned that he didn't acknowledge it.
No, you asked
like,
about
nah,
the divide, and then I went. You asked about the divide, and then I went well, back no, to something that you said that he did that he acknowledged it.
Okay, well, I was about to make a point about the divide, but when you
okay.
said he didn't acknowledge it, I was like, I'm pretty
okay.
sure I remember him acknowledging it. Which to me, what we just stated again, for me, that's proof that this man know it exists. I'm not surprised to see a white privileged man play the
but
shit down. Like,
knows,
that's nothing new
I'm
to
sorry,
me.
But even if he knows that it exists, the fact that he's a freaking sociopath is problematic.
I get that part. I'm just, what I'm saying, though, is, okay, that, you know, that's another label. But what I'm saying is, can you understand, in my opinion, why the racist thing, which is what's been pushed for 4 years, to me, has been completely overplayed. I just personally think it's a misplay on identity politics that's fine. Yeah,
I don't think it's
and
a
I'm
misplay.
Saying,
here, because we are in, and granted, he's played to his base, but because of that, he's ignited a level of racism that we haven't seen, obvious racism that we haven't seen since the civil rights movement. And that's problematic because even once he's gone from office, these lunatics with rifles and other handguns are still going to be out here trying to hang black people, attacking black people, making plans to kidnap them and kill them. He set all of this in motion, because he's a malignant narcissist, trying to win because that's all that matters to him, not caring about the collateral damage. The racism that he's pushed, even though it's transactional, is starting a civil war that's going to impact us for years to come once we've forgotten about Donald Trump. So I can't forgive that.
Right. I'm not calling you to convince you. You know, for your personal thing, I'll just let you know it doesn't look like that at all for those of us who see that as And when I say transactional, I'm not talking about just transactional to his base. Because the next thing I'm going to say to you is, in him being transactional, like, this, again, this is just, so I'm just letting, you know, again, it's not about, like, I'm not trying to have you agree with me. I was just making
yeah,
you aware how it doesn't look like that at all to a lot of people. And I can see how it does it. It looks like, what are y'all talking about? Because.
And I can see that, Montoya.
So that's what I see
people looking at it that way. As short-sighted, that's just my perspective. They're not digging deeper. They're not looking at the long-term impact. And whether that's his true intention or not, the fact that he has the mindset or the psychological condition that he has makes him dangerous. And he doesn't care who hits
well,
him.
Well,
so
I've already
him.
Said. Yeah, I've already. Yeah.
Right.
And so what I'm saying
so,
is I've
so
already said
you, you
why.
And a lot of people have that perspective. I look at it more holistically, I think. And I guess with
yeah,
me, I'm analyzing. I'm just not just looking at the surface of what he said. I'm also looking at
yeah,
the damage it, that the way he conducts business, how that's impacting us and will continue to.
Yeah, it's not, I mean, if you assume that I'm not looking at that, that's one thing or whatever. I guess I'm just pointing
you
out.
You may be looking at it, but we're both
can.
Looking at it differently. I'm not saying that you're not, but when you're, in your analysis, you came to a different conclusion than I did.
Yeah, well, I mean,
and
I already knew your conclusion. I was just, yeah. I already knew your conclusion. I was just pointing out why I thought it was an overplay, because for a lot of people who can see those things, that becomes an overplay.
Right, and it's
well,
not
get,
an overplay
know,
to me. And I guess it's
so
because
the
way that I assessed it. I'm sorry.
Right. So the unfortunate part of it possibly being an overplay is how it falls on deaf ears to people who see it that way. That's what makes me say that part was an overplay.
What
I think
I've learned in these last 4 years is that Trump is very divisive. People don't read. People don't research. They listen to sound bites and they read headlines. And they're going to form their opinion. And if they have to read more than 3 sentences, they're going to dismiss it. And so my perspective is based on lots of reading, lots of research, lots of analysis. I know that most people won't agree with me, and I'm okay with that.
Right, I wanted to go other places. I'm not, you know, like I said, I'm not even talking about your perspective. I wanted to get into some other things. Yeah. I'm not trying to convince you to change your perspective. You know what I mean? Because I already know kind of where you stand on that. But you know, where another place I wanted to go in reference to this divide though is, for example, knowing that people can see those things, you know, similar to me, like that exists. And so that ends up not, those things don't affect what they're looking at. Right. And so for like, even
mm-hmm.
for black men, the concept that, you know, we've now has been put out publicly, and it's been kind of put out for a while, you know, like say for those of us who paid attention, that we knew that Trump was going after the black male vote, you know, and has been really almost for a couple of years. Obviously
mm-hmm.
ramped it up, you know, closer to this time. And so when I say, you know, a big part of my concern was just how divided we get within our community. And so in making that push, you know, the idea is they might could get 20% of the African black male vote or whatever. And so
mm-hmm.
a big frustration for my divide is that we will allow these political narratives within our community to have conversations where we are saying that, you know, black men are this way or see it this way. And if, you know, if he were to so happen to get 20%, and I'm looking at that like, if 80% of black men, which I think last time, what he got, 9% or something, which is kind of high, maybe 13%.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember right now, 4 years ago. Okay, got you. Yeah. So, yeah. I think it was 12% in Florida. It might have been 10% for the national, if I remember.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I know
12%.
It was 12%
the 12% in Florida had everybody upset, you know, with the guy that ran for, was it governor or down there?
Mm-hmm.
I remember that same thing happened with Florida, and Florida was, you know, slightly higher than the national at the time. So either way, whatever that number was, and so in our community, we run back into the gender battle of black men see it this way, and I'm like, the majority of black men, you know, in a sense, are with you. So it's not a black men see it this way thing if 10%,
mm-hmm.
you know, at last year or 4 years ago, not last year. But, you know, if it were to get close, higher than the 10% or 12% or whatever that number is. And so here we are in our community letting politics drive us into a gender battle when the majority of black men, in a, you know, are with you. And then you've acknowledged this plenty of, you know, for years. But going back to just really how we speak, you know, the idea that slightly more last time, we don't know what it'll be this time, but slightly more white women, like 52% of white women voted for Trump and that kind of
mm-hmm.
stuff.
So we'll get stuck in our community arguing with each other despite, you know, in a sense, that being the drive, you know, in a sense, in this case, white women would be a bigger driving, you know, thing in reference to him being, you know, being in presidency last time. So in our community, we're divided and using generalized terms that, you know, and I think, again, I think all of the identity politics ends up being a major, major issue. They're attached to the patriarchy and that kind of stuff where, like, I saw Roland Martin talk about this when he was talking back and forth with Cube. And, you know, they was having that conversation with Cube. I thought was, in my opinion, was a brilliant question when he said to Roland Martin, like, why is, you know, why can the Trump administration believe they can get that vote? Which he was trying to, you know, kind of put it back to Roland to say, you know, why was that window even left open or whatever? And it took, you know, in my, you know, I'm pretty sure you've seen it as well, but it took Roland probably about 5 minutes to finally go circle back to understand what Cube was saying in that moment. But even Roland said, before he answered him, he just kind of said, well, the black men definitely don't agree, you know, they align with the immigration push that Trump, you know, aligns with. Economically, a lot of that black, you know, a lot of those black men are sitting better. And so those have been their main reason that they're seeing the increase in black male vote, according to what, you know, Roland Martin's able to look at in his political world.
Right.
And so when I'm watching it, I'm going, like, that makes more sense to me than these airy racial identity politics aspects of pitting us against each other versus what the real reasons why some black men are considering Trump. Like that would be, you know, again, in my opinion, a better discussion. And then Roland goes as far as to say that that the Democratic Party has not went after black male votes at all. And so I'm looking
I don't know, because
ahead,
I haven't paid attention to it, because I'm not a black man. So I haven't really paid attention to it. And I don't really delve into the identity politics like that. And I actually think that part of the issue when it comes to black and white, the divide between black and white, black men and women, is that politics is just one of those things that's just a continuation or an extension of the divide that already exists. And that's just one more thing that they can say, well, black men this and black women this. I've seen a lot of posts asking those questions, and they, you know, it's so many unflattering and down, and some of it's hurtful comments that are made about black women or black men with regard to why some support Trump and why women support the Democrats. Nobody's really taking the time to really do an assessment or an analysis. And I would say, you know, I don't know if the Democratic Party has made an attempt to come to black, to appeal to black men. What would they have to do to appeal to them? I don't know, because I'm not one, and I don't understand the mindset of a black man, because I'm a black woman. So what would they have to do in order to be considered reaching out to black men specifically?
Now, this is definitely, you know, a fair question. Like, cause for me, when I listen to, I'll try to answer in a second, but I just want to throw this out. Like, you know, I've always consistently said that I understand that politics is personal interest. So, like, when you break down, you know, your personal interest for why, you know, you're going to make the vote you're going to make, like, that makes sense to me. You know what I mean? Like, I can hear that, you know, I can hear that through. And so some people, I can listen to their personal interest, and I'm like, okay, I see why that makes sense for them. And that's just what seems to be so difficult for, you know, with politics in general to get done. And so we run with the, in a sense, in the narratives, to the extent that we allow politics to divide, I guess, like you said, even the, you know, maybe some, you know, some aspects of that divide that already exist. I think because of what it is, politics, it seems like more to me at this time than even what, you know, what we always kind of talk about, that divide, you know, like, so you may be right, it's just, you know, just an enhancement of what's already there. It seems like it seems like every 4 years it goes harder and takes what's there, and we leave, when we come out of it in a even worse position as far as culturally or collectively how we're looking at one another. And like, and I feel like, again, that Florida example with, you know, whatever, whoever the governor was running at that time, you know, or whatever, was a perfect example. Because I'm sitting here going, how is 12%, you know, like I said a few seconds ago, how is that, you know, black men not with you? You know what I mean? Right. And so it's just like the politics makes it, you know, like I said, you may be right, but I'll just say for me, it feels like it makes it worse. And so,
well, I don't think it's worse because I intentionally will read some of the misogynistic posts that are out there. And it's just an extension of it to me. Like I read one recently where a guy was complaining that black women think they're doing something by being in corporate America and the white man is just using them, giving them jobs and promoting them, while at the same time they're holding the black man down. And his perspective essentially was black women need to turn down the jobs that they have or turn down promotions.
Oh, wow.
Black men can have those opportunities. And so that's a growing movement of black men who think that way. But when you pull it back and look at the number of single black moms raising kids, they can't turn down a job or turn down a promotion because they got to take care of their families. And yes,
wow,
we are very well aware that oftentimes they may hire a black woman because they prefer not to hire a black man. We recognize that. What are we supposed to do to take care of ourselves?
If you're saying that's growing, then that's super scary because like the part you just said, you know, we've definitely talked about it on the show in the past or whatever. And, wow, that's a reality. You know, clearly you're saying, you know, man, like to me, that's like, you know, it's almost stupid, right? But, you know
that's
what I mean? And I always hope. Yeah, I always hope. And, you know, maybe I'm too hopeful, but I kind of hope that the men that stupid are still in the gist of the minority, you know. But again, knowing that all those minority groups of even within our own community are getting larger, you know what I mean, with the access to social media to be able to find one another, you know, or whatever. But also, you know, I think here's one concept that I do think happens. I do think the kind of people that are prone to that definitely seem to be on social media more than people who are not.
They're probably working.
Yeah, that's part of it, exactly. So people who are, yeah, that's what you feel me? So it's like, I think it becomes easier to see people who want to find people who think to that degree like themselves. You know what I mean? So it's almost like those groups seek, and it's so easy to do and connect, you know, on social media.
And they find people that are impressionable,
you know what I mean?
And they add more to their group, and that's just how it begins to be perpetuated over and over again. I do believe that to be true, but when I look at the various types of arguments about women, you know, black women and about black men, I look at the various comments about black women and black men, this is just another layer of that division. And it's an excuse, I honestly believe. I think that if, like I said, if people just put the past aside, you know, black women have always done this and they did this and they don't need a man, and black men do this and do that. I think we've all hurt each other, but what do we do to move forward? And that's the point that we can't get to, because everybody's still wallowing in their hurt. And until we get beyond that, we're going to constantly be a target because we are so divisive. So it's an easy target. Trump's administration is a master at finding those ripe for the picking. And they recognize that.
Yeah, like matter of fact, one more thing I want to bring up too along that line. We only got like 10 minutes away. I got things set up, so I want to make sure, I wanted to ask you about this. In reference to what you said, I'm like what you just said, and, you know, like you said, right for the pickings. So, like, with the situation, like, for example, back to Ice Cube, if you will, right? You know, we kind of had that dialogue. I'm not going to go too, you know, back into that dialogue. But here's an example of something I struggle with, and just kind of hear your thoughts on it. So, you're getting, you know, I kind of explain how I don't think he lines up to be the racist we make him out to be. Again, I'm not saying that him being a sociopath and him being narcissistic doesn't fan the fire. You know what I'm saying? I'm not trying to make it okay. I just don't think he's, you know, in a sense, I think he's just selfish to the degree that he ain't even racist. You feel me? He's just about himself, right or wrong.
Right.
I think that. So,
yeah,
but because he's willing to be trans, yeah, but because he's willing to be transactional, then, you know, obviously people felt, you know, what one, you know, one way or another about how Q did it. But I think what happens for those who do see him as transactional and not racist, they also have the examples where African Americans have gotten something. So it becomes even more difficult. And then when I say get something, I'm talking about, you know, for example, I thought about this. If I was a, if I was a HBCU president, right, and you get this invite, you know, get this invite, you know, to the, you know, to the White House, and it's to discuss, you know, the funding and possibly making it, you know, making it permanent, where they don't have to, you know, quote unquote, ask. If I'm a, if I'm a HBCU president in need of that, those finances, you typically ought to ask and get them every year anyway from whatever, whoever the hell the president is. So it's kind of a normal thing. But if I'm asked, make the trip and take a picture with me to get, you know, supposedly more money, you know, like I said, obviously with the research, you find out it's not more money. But in the moment, I'm saying in the moment, in a sense, you know, that's what you're being told. I'm going to sign up for that photo op every time. All the, you know, get the transactional thing is, I want the photo op with the HBCU president. I couldn't imagine. I can't imagine. And we, you know, we ate them up for doing it. I'm talking about collectively. We ate them up. But I couldn't imagine if I'm in those shoes that I'm going to not give up, because that's politics. You get some of what you want and some of what you don't. And if all I got to give up is a photo op, how do you expect the HBCU president, depending on that money dropping, to not give up the photo op? Like, and I'm saying that's the kind of stuff that we beat them up for, in my opinion.
And here's why. And I don't change my stance, because if you look at his track record, you can be hopeful and gracious and all of that. I'm not. I'm skeptical. And I'm skeptical because every time I look at his track record, he'll do something for people of color, but on the back end, he's taking it back. He gave to the HBCUs, and now they, because they sit up under the president's office, they're not eligible for funding that, that Congress might provide for them. So that's a negative.
So, but you don't, but you don't, but you don't have that track record enough when you,
no,
when
no.
you get that invite
you got
the first
that
year
track
as president.
From a historical, you got that track record from a historical perspective. It may not have been about that issue in particular, but I'm looking at it again, looking at how he operates. And so if I'm making a decision, I'm going to say, okay, this is how he's operated. What makes me think he's going to operate differently now?
But I'm saying, well, you don't have, what I'm saying, what is the track record? Because even like in business, it's not a, a bunch of interaction with, you know, African, you know what I mean? It's a business interaction. So I don't know how a HBUC president researches that and says no to the photo op, or who's the other, you know, the other, or like the, even, you know, like Pastor Jamal Bryan or whatever, when, you know what I mean, their input played a role in the, you know, the First Step Act or whatever. And Jamal Bryan, you know, said, I still will go back because I know what took place in those meetings. Like, I would make the same decision. And I'm not saying that makes me right. I just don't know, you know, Jamal Bryan saying that it was sincere in the work that we did and hoping to get it. And, the, you know, that getting the First Step Act end up being, you know, a result of his work as far as he was concerned, being, you know, being that prison reform was that mattered to him. So to me, playing politics means you go talk to those people and get some of what you want, some of the that you don't.
And that's fine. And you can play politics. But at the end of the day, you got to play smart politics. You got to look at his history, look at his track record, even look at how he's conducted business, because he's running his country the same way he's run his businesses, right into the ground. And he's not been an honest businessman through all of these years. It's out there. It's a matter of public record. So anything, any interaction I had with this man, it will be with a tremendous amount of skepticism, because his track record is, I need to not trust you, because you have shown yourself not to be trustworthy. And that's precisely what his administration did with Ice Cube. That's precisely what his administration did with the HBCUs. That's even precisely what they did with the First Step Act, because on the one hand, while they gave them that out, on the backhand, Sessions has been undoing reform to keep people in jail. So come on. So we can sit here and try to be naive and say, we, you know, we got to play the game. But you got to play the game smart. And part of playing the game smart is researching. What does Trump do? He collects op-eds.
So with your research, do you conclude you don't interact at all?
I didn't say that. You go in.
That's
smart.
What I'm asking.
You
so in, yeah. So right. So I'm saying is I'm an HBCU president. I know the history, and I got to give up a photo op though. That's what I got to give up. So what? So I'm supposed to not give up the photo op? Like
you
I'm
want
just saying
photo,
that was the option.
So when I say no, but see the thing is he wanted that photo op too, right? Trump wanted
that
photo op.
I'm saying that's the give and take of politics. So I'm trying to get
understand that. So they should have
right.
taken smarter. So they go in with this, you know, sort of like you know that's what I'm saying. I'm just saying play the game smart, because while we know that Trump's not the brightest bulb in the pack, his grandson, his son-in-law is. He's very smart. Stephen Miller is very smart. The strings that are the people that are manipulating Trump are the smart ones. And if you're going to go into that lion's den, you need to go into that lion's den well informed, understanding what you want, understanding that whatever agreement that he puts out, you need to have it. You need to be able to have it analyzed in that moment, front, backwards, upside down, every way, to see what loophole there is that's going to get him out of that agreement quietly. After the
photo
op,
I can respect it. Right. So, yeah, so what I'm saying is I can respect that, but your request to come in the photo op is going to be prior to being able to do that. Like, that's the reality of getting the request. If they're asking, can we get the funding? And then he says, I'm going to invite you to the White House to talk about it.
But right now today they're struggling because they can't get additional funding. They've been disqualified for certain funding that they've gotten.
It's not that I don't understand the results. I'm just trying to say what is the play. I'm just trying to figure out what would be the play smart when you just get that invite. What's the play smart?
You don't.
Like, I don't know how they would do. I don't know what the play smart could be.
So to me, you find a way to gain the upper hand. You don't automatically just play into the ploy that his administration lays out. And I don't know how you do that because I'm not into politics. I don't know what the agreement was that was extended to them. But you have to look at it.
Come talk about it. That's your invitation. Come talk about it.
What? I didn't hear you.
So, the first part of the play is, you know, they didn't get, you know, they wanted to talk to Obama. He didn't let them talk to them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like if you remember, because he withheld it, you know, before he finally gave it over, and he gave it every year. But the initial part was, they was trying to talk to him, and he wouldn't let them. So Trump just says, come talk to me about it. So I'm just saying, you get on the plane to go talk about it.
I understand what you're saying. I completely understand what you're saying. And I'm saying, you got to play hardball with him. I'm saying that, no, I wouldn't have given him the photo op. We'll meet together off camera. We'll discuss what we want, and we'll give you the photo op once we've agreed on what we're going to get and what you're going to get from this. I totally get it. But because of his track record, you can't go in there blind.
I think he's going in there blind. I'm just sitting here going, I'm not simple as fuck. It's just literally, I let you come talk about it, you know, and I'm going to give it to you, and I'm going to make it permanent. I want a photo op.
We get a photo op after this agreement has been assessed by our attorney. Then you get your photo op.
They're not going to fly you back up. They're not going to fly you back up.
And
you can just be like, okay,
fine,
don't be. Yeah.
In the long run, hurt them, Montoya. It's hurt them. So had they done that, and had he refused them, they would still be eligible for funding that they've always gotten. Plus, they would be eligible for whatever funding that Congress gives them. But because they did that photo op and he made this grand thing about, I'm going to place them under the executive division, now they don't qualify for funding from the legislative division.
Yeah.
So had he told them,
I don't think
they
always
are qualified
for it because the president gets to hold it. So that's how he played them. And I get it. I don't think it's an easy play, but I respect it. Yeah, we're at the end of it, but it was good talking to you, Quinn.
It was good talking to you, too. Bye.
All right, we'll catch up.